Hello and welcome to the New World Witchery Folk Magician's Notebook episode for October of 2023. These are short monthly episodes that will offer a brief overview of folk magical topics and information that might be useful to you over the coming month. As always, we highly recommend that you also pick up a copy of a reputable and reliable almanac for folk magic, such as the Witch's Almanac, Llewellyn's Witch's Datebook, or your local Farmer's Almanac.
Let's take a look at the moon for October 2023. The new moon will occur on October 14th in the sign of Virgo. The moon will be full on October 28th in the sign of Aries and is commonly known as the Hunter's Moon, or sometimes the Sanguine or Blood Moon. Spooky. The Anishinaabe people also called it the Falling Leaves Moon. We begin the month with the moon waning in Taurus, making it a good time to do any seed saving, drying, canning, or other long-term preservation necessary. That also makes it a wonderful time to get rid of old spell ingredients and clean out your magical spice rack, so to speak. We shift into Gemini and Cancer from the 3rd through the 7th, which may mean guarding your words a bit to avoid conflicts and to do some work pruning your garden and cleaning house, including any magical house cleaning involving enchanted floor washes, for example. The moon is in Leo and Virgo for a few days to follow, which can make it a good time to gather both your fruits and your roots. Go apple picking if you can, or pull those last carrots or potatoes from the garden. You might also prepare some ancestral offerings, or even begin an ancestral altar, which will also be great for the end of the month Halloween, / All Hallows, / Samhain celebrations. The moon becomes new on the 14th in the sign of Libra, which makes it a good time to cut some flowers and put them up around your home, or to do flower-based divinations like the he loves me, he loves me not daisy method. It's also a good time to dispel some harmful habits or break ties with people or things that no longer help you. This will also be the date of a solar eclipse, one visible throughout much of the United States, especially in the western half of North America. It will peak around 2 p.m. Eastern Time, creating a powerful void for banishment or removal work if you are inclined to work with eclipses. Many people are not. As the moon begins to grow again, it does so in Scorpio, which pulls that October energy into full gear. It's time for sensuality, glamour, and magic. Do spells that make you feel energized and in touch with your body. Sex magic is a good example, but so are baths or dressing candles, which will get your hands nice and messy. On the 17th, the moon enters Sagittarius, keeping the high octane vibes up, and then it slides into Capricorn on the 19th to help settle us into some stability. Long-term magical work is good now, especially money work that will take a bit of time to manifest, so new job spells or saving spells aimed at big goals like a house or car. As the moon enters Aquarius on the 22nd, you have a great time for doing any pest control in the garden and for picking and storing your magical herbs. Importantly, both Mercury and the Sun will be in Scorpio starting on the 23rd, so if you've got some plans that need big Scorpio energy, especially ones that require convincing people with words, that's a good time to get that work going. The moon continues to grow in Pisces and Aries from the 24th to the 27th, so you may start getting some intense dreams or some antsy energy. That will be amplified by the full blood moon on the 28th, which appears just as Taurus takes the stage again, meaning a moon full of deeply embodied power. Dance naked, fill up on good food, including full-size Halloween candy bars if you like, and don't hesitate to make some big, rich magic. There will also be a lunar eclipse on this day, visible in Africa, Europe, Asia, and parts of Australia if you want to make use of that for more removal work, another good time for a deep house cleaning sort of magic. Finally, we end the month sliding into Samhain and All Hallows in Gemini. Time to speak to the dead. It's a good night or two for necromancy and connecting with ancestors or spirits. And, of course, getting some more of those full-size candy bars. Now we'll take a look at cards, divination, and proverbs for the month. Each month, Corey and I will pull a card for each other, one playing card and one tarot or oracle card. We'll indicate the meanings of those cards in general, then read them for the other person specifically as a way to get a sense of how they are read in actual practice.
Our playing card of the month, This month, I pulled the Seven of Spades. The sevens in any suit are often a sort of twist on that suit's meanings. Since spades are about loss and spirituality, the Seven of Spades means blood, sweat, tears, and war. Sounds pretty gloom and doom, doesn't it? But it's important that when we think of this, we remember that there are many ways to view it. Yes, this can warn about coming conflicts and bracing for stress and strife, but it can also mean that hard work is going to pay off the rewards for all your blood, sweat, and tears, for example. And while we might think of war as bad, it can also lead to things like victory or mastery of a situation. For Lane, then, I'm inclined to think that this is going to be a month involving some hard work and effort, but which will ultimately result in mastery of a situation that has felt unmanageable previously. It's a card that says, don't shy away from conflict, but instead stay and fight, advocate for yourself, and know that every drop of effort you make will bring you ultimately closer to getting what you need and what you want.
For this month's card reading, I also pulled a seven, the seventh card in the Major Arcana, the Chariot. On this card, we see a man, dressed in armor and alchemical symbols, standing in a chariot that is being pulled by two sphinxes, one white and one black. The deck tells us that this card means succor and providence, but also war, triumph, presumption, vengeance, and trouble. According to Pollock's book, 78 Degrees of Wisdom, the card represents maturity, accepting the limits of life, success, and indicates victory, but warns to be careful of contradictions. Overall, this card is a sign of encouragement to take action, or if you already have taken that first scary step, this card tells you to bravely stay the course and don't fail the test of your willpower. I know Corey is going through some major life changes right now, and I see this card as an encouragement for him, and that though things are hard now, he's headed in the right direction. Our folk divination method of the month is the Venus glass. This is a very old but very important method for folk divination. While it can be done any time, traditional occasions for its use include special holidays like Halloween or New Year's Eve. Christopher Marlowe's 1593 play, Venus and Adonis, mentions a Venus glass as a type of magic mirror that lets one see things happening elsewhere or that are hidden from view. Salem minister Lawson complained of young people using the white of an egg in a glass to determine the identities of future spouses. Cotton Mather echoed these concerns, so the Puritans were not fans of the Venus glass. Well, at least officially, they weren't. It turns out, young Puritans were using this method to predict their futures quite a lot. Why is it called a Venus glass? In the Marlowe play, the glass is just another word for mirror, a symbol often associated with Aphrodite, or later with Venus in Roman myth. Mirrors have many connections to beauty, of course, so the link to a goddess of love and beauty makes sense. But some of the oldest scrying instruments have also been found to be mirrors. For example, polished obsidian ones like the glass used by famed Elizabethan magician John Dee. Spending time looking into a watery or reflective surface is a good way to develop scrying skills. The basic idea of a Venus glass is to take an egg, which is another magically charged symbol, and hold it in your hands while thinking of a thing you wish to know, a question, the identity of a thief or future spouse, the location of a buried treasure, and so forth. Then, the egg is cracked and dropped into a glass of water. As the white settles and congeals, it will form shapes, ribbons and curtains in some cases, but more concrete symbols like a pan or a knife as well. To aid in making this happen, it helps for the water to be a bit warmer than room temperature. It shouldn't be boiling or scalding, but lightly heated water will make congealing happen a bit faster. Think bathwater and not boiling for this. Once you've dropped your egg in the water, you simply look for shapes the way you might do for tea leaves. If you've asked a question about a future love, you might look to see if a heart shape forms. You can also pay attention to things like bubbles. For example, if your question is about money, an abundance of bubbles can be a good thing. In some curanderismo practices, Attention is also paid to bubbles that have curtain-like shrouds of egg white on them, which can represent spirits attached to the person in question. Since this method is largely used after an egg-based limpia or spirit cleansing. Additionally, finding blood, black spots, or a foul smell in the egg when it is cracked is usually an indication that something very bad has entered the picture, a curse or harmful witchcraft, for example. Most of the time, however, you'll just be looking for recognizable shapes, a key-like shape to indicate it's time to move house or apartments, or a boat to tell you it's a good time to book that Alaskan cruise with your honey. Just maybe stay away from Puritan ministers while you do this one. They're not usually fans.
Our witch's proverb of the month. Villainy wears many masks, none so dangerous as the mask of virtue. A quote from Washington Irving's The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. Our folktale of the month comes to us from Hungary and is called The Lover's Ghost. Somewhere, I don't know where, even out beyond the great seas, there was once a maid. She had lost her father and mother, but she loved the handsomest lad in the village where she lived. They were happy together, as a pair of turtle doves in the wood. They fixed the day of their wedding at a not very distant date and invited their most intimate friends to it, the girl her godmother and the lad a dear old friend of his. Time went on, and the wedding would have taken place in another week, but in the meantime, war broke out in the country. The king called out all of his fighting men to march against the enemy. The sabers were sharpened, and gallant fellows on fine, gaily caparisoned horses swarmed to the banners of the king like bees. John, our hero, took leave of his pretty fiancée. He led out his gray charger, mounted, and said to his young bride, "I shall be back in 3 years, my dove. Wait until then and don't be afraid. I promise to bring you back my love and to remain faithful to you, even were I tempted by the beauty of 1,000 other girls." The lass accompanied him as far as the frontier, and before parting solemnly promised to him amidst a shower of tears that all the treasures of the whole world should not tempt her to marry another, even if she had to wait 10 years for her John. Well, the war lasted 2 years, and then peace was conducted between the belligerents. The girl was highly pleased with the news because she expected to see her lover return with the others. She grew impatient, and would sally forth on the road by which he was expected to return to meet him. She would go out often, 10 times a day, but as yet she had no tidings of her John. 3 years elapsed, then 4, and then more, and the bridegroom had not yet returned. The girl could not wait any longer, but went to see her godmother and asked for her advice, who, I must tell you between ourselves, was a witch. The old hag received her well, and gave her the following direction. "As it will be a full moon tomorrow night, go into the cemetery, my dear girl, and ask the gravedigger to give you a human skull. If he should refuse, tell him that it is I who sent you. Then bring the skull home to me. We shall place it in a huge earthenware pot, and boil it with some millet, say for 2 hours, and you may be sure it will let you know whether your lover is alive or dead yet. And perchance it will even entice him here." The girl thanked her for her good advice and went to the cemetery the next night. She found the gravedigger enjoying his pipe in front of the gate. "Good evening to you, dear old father."
"Oh, good evening, my lass. What are you doing here at this hour of the night?"
"I've come to ask you to grant me a favor."
"Well, let me hear what it is, and if I can, I'll comply with your request."
"Well, then, give me a human skull."
"With pleasure, but what do you intend to do with it?"
"I don't know exactly myself. My godmother has sent me for it."
"Well and good. Here's one. Take it."
The girl carefully wrapped up the skull and ran home with it. Having arrived at home, she put it in the huge earthenware pot with some millet and at once placed it on the fire. The millet soon began to boil and throw up bubbles as big as two fists. The girl was eagerly watching it and wondering what would happen. When all of a sudden, a huge bubble formed on the surface of the boiling mass and went off with a loud report like a musket. The next moment, the girl saw the skull balanced on the rim of the pot.
"He has started," it said in a vicious tone.
The girl waited a little longer. Then two more loud reports came from the pot, and the skull said,
"He has got halfway."
Another few moments elapsed. The pot gave three very loud reports, and the skull was heard to say,
"He has arrived outside in the yard."
The maid thereupon rushed out and found her lover standing close to the threshold. His charger was snow white, and he himself was clad entirely in white, including his helmet and boots. As soon as he caught sight of the girl, he asked, "Will you come to the country where I dwell?"
"To be sure, my dear Jack, to the very end of the world."
"Then come up into my saddle." The girl mounted into the saddle, and they embraced and kissed one another ever so many times.
"And is the country where you live very far from here?"
"Yes, my love, it is very far, but in spite of the distance, it will not take us long to get there." Then they started on their journey. When they got outside the village, they saw 10 mounted men rush past, all clad in spotless white, like to the finest flower. As soon as they vanished, another 10 appeared, and could be well seen in the moonlight, as John suddenly said, "How beautiful shines the moon, the moon. How beautifully march past the dead. Are you afraid, my love, my little Judith?"
"I'm not afraid when I can see you, my dear Jack."
As they proceeded, the girl saw 100 mounted men. They rode past in beautiful military order like soldiers. And soon, the 100 vanished and another 100 appeared and followed the others. And her lover once again said, "How beautifully shines the moon, the moon. How beautifully march past the dead. Are you afraid, my love, my little Judith?"
"I'm not afraid when I can see you, my darling Jack."
As they proceeded, the mounted men appeared in fast increasing numbers, so she could not count them. Some rode past so close they nearly brushed against her, and again her lover said, "How beautifully shines the moon, the moon. How beautifully march past the dead. Are you afraid, my love, my little Judith?"
"I am not afraid when I see you, Jack, my darling."
"You are a brave and good girl, my dove. I see that you would do anything for me. As a reward, you shall have everything that your heart can wish when we get to my new country." They went along till they came to an old burial ground, which was enclosed by a black wall. John stopped here and said to his sweetheart, "This is our country, my little Judith. We shall soon come to our house." The house, to which John alluded, was an open grave, at the bottom of which an empty coffin could be seen with the lid off. "Go in, my darling," said the lad.
"You had better go first, my love Jack," replied the girl. "You know the way."
Thereupon the lad descended into the grave and laid down in the coffin. But the lass, instead of following him, ran away as fast as her feet would carry her, and took refuge in a mansion that was situated a couple of miles from the cemetery. When she had reached the mansion, she shook every door, but none of them would open to her entreaties, except one that led to a long corridor, at the end of which there was laid out a dead body in a state in a coffin. The lass secreted herself in a dark corner of the fireplace. As soon as John discovered that his bride had run away, he jumped out of the grave and pursued the lass. But in spite of all of his exertions, he could not overtake her. When he reached the door at the end of the corridor, he knocked and exclaimed, "Dead man, open the door to a fellow dead man." The corpse inside began to tremble at the sound of those words. And again Jack said, "Dead man, open the door to a fellow dead man." And now the corpse sat up in his coffin, and Jack repeated a third time the words, "Dead man, open the door to a fellow dead man." And the corpse walked to the door and opened it. "Is my bride here?"
"Yes, there she is, hiding in the corner of the fireplace."
"Come, let us tear her in pieces."
And with this intention, they both approached the girl, but just as they were about to lay hands upon her, the cock in the loft began to crow, announcing daybreak, and the two men disappeared. The next moment, a most richly attired gentleman entered from one of the neighboring rooms. Judging by his appearance, one would have believed it was the king himself, who at once approached the girl and overwhelmed her with his embraces and kisses. "Thank you so much. That corpse you saw here laid out in state was my brother. I have already had him buried 365 times with the greatest pomp, but he has returned each time. As you have relieved me of him, my sweet, pretty darling, you shall become mine and I yours, and not even the hoe and spade shall separate us from one another." The girl consented to the proposal of the rich man. They got married and celebrated their wedding feast that same winter. This is how far the tale goes, and this is the end of it. This sad story deals with the poor young woman whose heart is already broken by the absence of her lover, only to turn into a chilling horror tale about a malicious roving corpse intent on dragging her down to be with him. It somewhat resembles the Jewish folk tale, The Corpse Bride, the same one that inspired the Tim Burton-esque claymation film. But the arc of this story is somewhat different. The girl's attachment to her beloved sees her following him right up to the mouth of the grave, and even claiming she's not afraid to go after him so long as he's with her. Critically, however, she does turn at the last moment in an act of self-preservation. What if we thought about this story as one of grief, especially one grieving the loss of love? We start the story acknowledging that the girl has lost her parents and saying that what gives her life meaning now is her betrothal to a particularly handsome young man, but a few years can change things. Sometimes we get entangled in relationships that feel incredibly strong for a time, only to later discover we're simply riding a long road that may well take us to a place we are not wanting to go. Perhaps not the grave, but a place that might result in the mourning of a loss of a piece of ourselves. And sometimes we also feel so devoted to someone that we're convinced that living without them has no meaning. But here we see that the young bride finally realizes she must let go of a relationship and a person who can no longer love her the way she needs to be loved, as a living woman in this case. And so she makes a choice, even at the last moment, to turn onto a different path. Grieving the loss of love can hurt immensely. We can even find ourselves going down some very dark roads as we do so, but even though it may seem scary, perhaps not as scary as being pursued by two animated corpses, but you get the idea, we always have the option to turn and choose a new path. There's nothing wrong with self-preservation in the grieving process, and nothing wrong with making a choice that keeps you alive and going for another day, even through grief and fear and mourning. It gets better, and the living is worth it in the end. But it doesn't hurt if you have a witchy godmother who can make a skull talk too. I'm just saying. We'll finish up our notebook entry with a little charm or craft each month to add a practical element to your work. This time, magical floor washes. Several points this month lend themselves to cleansing work, and if you do ancestral-based practices for All Hallows, then having a clean and tidy house is a good way to make sure you're ready for a visit from the beloved dead. One of the best ways to add magic to your regular routine is to incorporate magical cleaning solutions, and one of the most widespread forms of this magic is the floor wash. This practice largely derives from African-American folk magic and hoodoo, although versions of magical washes are found in several places, including Irish folk magic too. Hoodoo, however, gave us one of the most ubiquitous magical washes around, Pine-Sol. I've written a good bit about that magical formula and its history in my books, but essentially it derives from the use of pine oil in African-American cleaning formulae, and they also provided a form of jinx protection and removal. If you want a very simple form of a floor wash, getting a big handful of pine needles and adding them to a bucket of hot water, then adding a bit of Pine-Sol, would give you a great basic wash that you could use to clear away any lingering harmful spirits or spiritual junk around your home. You can also find a lot of other pre-made magical formulae for these kinds of washes too. Another well-known one is Chinese wash, based on a recipe from the Algiers area of New Orleans, which includes a variation of Van Van Lucky oil and some broom straws as a good way to boost fortune in the home while cleansing it. Virtually any magical oil can be added to wash water to give it a boost. Money drawing, love drawing, sex drawing, or even law keep-away oils all sometimes get mixed in. One of the simplest and most widespread variations is to add cut lemons or lemon oil to wash water to get rid of anything that you might want to do you ill. And if you've ever seen lemon pine sol, you can bet that also comes from this kind of a recipe. Adding a bit of ammonia to your wash water is a powerful way to strip away any dirt, either physically or spiritually. Some folks will even add a few drops of their own urine to wash water, like this, to essentially mark their space and claim it as their own, dispelling any intrusive spirits. Since it's fall and you may be preparing for ancestors, think about adding some cider vinegar to a hot wash water, along with some Castile soap, such as Dr. Bronner's, and then letting some cinnamon sticks, allspice berries, and cloves soak in the water too. That would create an atmosphere cleansed of negativity, but inviting for friendly spirits. When using a floor wash, you want to use mostly water. Only about a quarter to a half cup of any magical mixtures are added to each gallon of wash water. Keep the water fairly warm, and make sure you're washing your floors, and sometimes your walls if you know you won't stain them, from the top floor to the bottom floor, and from the back of the house to the front. Finish by taking your used wash water out of the house and dumping it in the face of the setting sun if you're banishing or removing things. Or alternatively, if you're using a drawing water, you could pour it out towards the sun as it rises in the east. But either way, happy washing. That's it for this entry into your New World Witchery Folk Magician's Notebook. Thank you so much for joining us this month. We hope that you are having a wonderful spooky season and enjoying the increasing fall falliness, the autumnal falliness, and that you are finding all sorts of ways to celebrate that shift in seasons. We are going to be back again with more episodes this month, so keep an ear out for those. We should also have some of our spooky storytelling episodes coming as well. But for now, that's going to end us for the Folk Magician's Notebook. If you have anything that you'd like to share with us, please feel free to email us at compassandkey@gmail.com or newworldwitcherypodcast@gmail.com. And feel free to stop by our website, newworldwitchery.com, where we have over 200 episodes, over 200 website articles, all connected with folk magic that you can browse at your leisure. So, and you can also find all of our links to find us in other places as well. So. Thank you again so much to all of our listeners, to all of our supporters on Patreon as well. If you want to help support the show, you can go to patreon.com/newworldwitchery. Throw a dollar a month in the hat, whatever you can afford. Helps to make the show better, brighter, stronger, faster. So again, thank you so much. Have a wonderful October, and we'll see you again next month with a new Folk Magician's Notebook. For now, thanks for listening. Be well.